You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Back in the life of Jesus Christ, we need God to show us. We need to reveal Jesus Christ to us. We pray he would do that tonight. So we've been studying the life of Christ, and tonight John has taken us all the way to the final night of his life. You know, the first half of the book of John cover the first 33 years of his life. The second half cover the final couple of days of his life. So you can see the emphasis in the gospel writers. And here we have an episode as they sit down for what will someday be called the Last Supper. Jesus does something that is so profound and so shocking that 60 years later, you can just see this is still etched into the mind of John as he writes down the events of that night. And we see a very challenging teaching from Christ accompanied by a very challenging act of service. Jesus here tonight, we're gonna see he's doing the dirty work. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the show Dirty Jobs. Anybody ever seen that show? Mike Rowe travels around the country just trying to find what are the jobs that are just gross, nobody wants to do, and then he becomes like an apprentice for the day. So it's a reality TV show. Well, tonight in John 13, we have the original episode of Dirty Jobs. We have the pilot episode where Jesus is gonna do the gross job, the job that nobody wants to do. And we're gonna see he's got a lesson for us in this dirty job that he does. The last week of Jesus's life, we've been here for a couple of weeks now. We saw in John chapter 12, we see Jesus, his feet are anointed by Mary. We studied that a couple weeks ago. It's interesting, in John 12, we have a meal with friends with a foot washing. In that case, it's Mary washing the feet of Jesus with very expensive perfume and wiping them with her hair. And then on Sunday, we saw the triumphal entry where Jesus rides into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday to the roar and adoration of the crowds. On Monday, he returns to cleanse the temple. John does not include that cleansing of the temple. We've also got several chapters of teaching in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. We don't have that in John. John says, you've read all that in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. We're gonna speed ahead to the final night of Jesus' life where he's gonna give us five chapters worth of teaching in this block of teaching that is known by some as the upper room discourse or the upper room teaching. They found this room in someone's house. It's an upper room. It's like a second story room. And Jesus, he's gonna take the Passover meal, very important meal for this festival that people have come to Jerusalem for. He's gonna institute what's known as the Last Supper or the Lord's Supper or communion that we still celebrate today. And he's gonna teach them. But before he does all of that, he's going to model the kind of sacrificial serving love that we need to have in each other's lives. So let's start reading John chapter 13, verse 1. Before the Passover celebration, Jesus knew that his hour had come to leave this world and return to his Father. So the Passover, this is with hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of pilgrims had come to Jerusalem for this Passover festival. And this night was kind of the culmination of the Passover, where they would eat a Passover meal on Thursday night and then some would eat this meal on Friday. And Jesus knew his hour had come. And so remember, we saw last week, Jesus has been saying throughout the book, my hour has not yet come. Now he says, my hour has come. And so we're coming down to the focal point of his life. Really, this night here, these next 24 hours would be the most important 24 hours in the history of the human race, where Jesus knew a tremendous weight would fall upon him, tremendous pain, not just physical and emotional pain and shame, but the punishment for the sins of the world would be poured out upon him on the cross as he would die for our sins before rising from the dead. And he knew that he had loved his disciples during his ministry on earth, and now he loved them to the very end. So he had shown his disciples love in all kinds of ways. And Jesus, what he doesn't do is think, you know what? I've got a lot going on right now and I need to take it easy. It's time for some me time. It's time for people to serve Jesus instead of for Jesus to serve them. But no, he does not take his foot off the gas. He actually goes even deeper and more intense in his sacrifice and in his service toward the end. There's a lesson for us. Sometimes it can be tempting. We've done some good things and it's tempting to kind of coast for a little while. Jesus says, no, you need to do the opposite. Be like me. Love to the very end. Love to the uttermost. And it was during supper, the meal had already begun, The devil had already prompted Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. And so Judas, the traitor, had already received the money for betraying Jesus, but he didn't know where they were gonna have this meal. Jesus kind of kept the location a secret. And so he couldn't just send the religious leaders here. They wanted to arrest Jesus in a private place. But now that he knows where they are, and he also knows that afterward, they're gonna go out and they're gonna pray in the Garden of Gethsemane, just outside of Jerusalem. He has enough information now to betray Jesus. But the devil had already prompted Judas to betray Jesus. And Jesus knew that the Father had given him authority over everything, or literally had put all things into his hands. And he had come from God and would return to God. Here we have the creator of the universe, the one who has authority over everything in existence because he made it. And he knew where he had come from and he knew where he was going. And what does he do in this knowledge and with such great power? He got up from the table, took off his robe, wrapped a towel around his waist and poured water into a basin. And then he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel he had around him. What's going on here? This is not something we do today. This is not something we need to do today. They lived in a day of animal transport. Okay, you ever been on like the horse trail ride? And you're riding along and all of a sudden the horse in front of you stops and you see something you cannot unsee, where the horse just decides it's time to go and he just drops one right there on the trail, all right? That is a horrifying sight to a city boy like me. This was happening all over Jerusalem on a normal day. Here's a festival where you have even more people on the streets of Jerusalem and you have more animals just going wherever, dogs running around, just going wherever. It was also a day of not indoor plumbing, all right? You had a pot, a chamber pot, and you'd just go in that. And you know, you could take it outside the city when it got full, or you could just like take it a couple blocks over and dump it like in front of the neighbor's house. And so they had this on their streets. And it was also a day of open-toed shoes. And so you're walking around in sandals and the streets are covered with all of this stuff. And they did not have street sweeping back then, all right? So, you know, the good news was you didn't have to worry about your car getting towed on the first Thursday of the month. The bad news was all this stuff remained on the streets. Also, the other bad news, you didn't have a car. So their feet would have been filthy. Craig Keener, scholar, he says, disciples would do almost anything for their teachers that a slave would do, except deal with their feet, which was considered too demeaning for a free person. In fact, even Jewish slaves were exempt from having to do anything with feet. It was like a foot exemption. They had special slaves, non-Jewish slaves, that would handle this sort of thing. D.A. Carson says, there's no instance in either Jewish or Greco-Roman sources of a superior washing the feet of an inferior. And so this is completely unique among ancient literature, what we're about to read here, where someone of greater social status washes the feet of someone with lower social status. And you know, when we think Last Supper, this Da Vinci painting might come to mind. You gotta get that out of your mind. This is not how it would have looked. They would have been at what's called a triclinium. Tri meaning three tables, three couches. Clinium, these are couches, reclining, triclinium. And so you can kind of see, like the guy over here on the side, he's kind of leaning on his side, he's leaning on his left elbow, and his right hand is free to eat. They all would have been kind of lounging like this. It would have looked something like this. You see the three tables, there would have been three couches around those tables. According to Leon Morris, that the host, the head of the banquet, Jesus, would have been seated at the middle of the middle table. All right, so you can kind of see my stick figure artwork. You can kind of see what's, it's left elbow, right hand to eat with. The second highest position of honor would be right here, right at kind of the chest of the one who had set up the banquet. We know from the gospel accounts that John, the author of this gospel, was seated right there. Because there's a point where he leans his head onto the bosom, the breast of Jesus, and asks them a private question. And so you have John, the highest place of honor, you would seat someone to your left, at your back, as a sign of trust, This would be where you would put someone who would never betray you or stab you in the back. There's actually evidence that Judas was seated here. There's a point where Jesus is able to dip something in a bowl and hand it to him very easily. Doesn't have to get up to do it. There's a point where he has a private little conversation with Judas. Judas says, I'm not gonna betray you. And Jesus says, you said it yourself. And so whether Judas sat himself there, whether Jesus said, here, friend, sit at the place of honor where I would never put a traitor, I think it casts this meal in a little bit of a different light. The rest of the disciples, of course, would just be spread across the other couches. Hey, I'm not an art major, but I am PowerPoint certified. Very valuable skill. You can see here, the distance between the stinky feet and the face, very, very close. Not nearly enough distance there. Also, you know, the feet, you could rub the back of the guy next to you. It could be on the couch. I mean, this is just, you need to be cleaned up, all right? These guys actually would have had a very special treat for the Passover festival. You would actually get a full body ritual bath. They had these mikvahs, these cleaning, these ritual bath spots all over Jerusalem. You would get a full bath, but even with the full cleansing for the Passover, your feet would still get dirty as soon as you get out and start walking around again. It's hard to think of a modern equivalent of foot washing. You know, for us, it just seems a little weird, like might tickle. But you know, you think about being like, all right, arms up. I'm washing your armpits, boys. That's gross. You know, you're scrubbing all the deodorant balls out of the armpit hairs for all the guys. That would also tickle. Okay, tell me your reaction to this next one. Butt washing. All right, boys. It's time to clean up for dinner. Drop them. I had roommates, I remember, that would work as PSAs or PCAs over at the hospital. And one of their jobs is like wiping butts all day. I just remember thinking, I do not think I could do that. Like, I know once you do several dozen, you just kind of get used to it. But yeah, it's gross. It's gross. Anybody here ever changed a diaper on a little kid? Even that is kind of gross. I mean, again, you get used to it. But, you know, there came a point in my life where I'm like, I'm glad I'm done with that phase of parenting. I don't want to do this anymore. Nobody wanted to do it. Remember, too, you got one towel, one bucket, 12 guys. I mean, by the end, it's hard to tell. Are you taking off more than you're putting back on with this foot cleansing? He got up from the table, it says. So the meal had already started. Normally they washed before the meal. Everybody knew this. This was not a surprise. They all kind of walk in. I imagine everyone's feigning ignorance, pretending not to notice the feet have not been washed. It's like when you keep passing the trash can and it keeps getting fuller and you're like, the trash needs taken out. And you're like, you just kind of balancing your thing on top or pressing it down. And you're like, look, I did it 3 times already, okay? Or I've had a tough day. And this other guy, he barely does anything. He should be taking the trash out. Everybody's got a reason why they shouldn't serve. Everyone does. You've always got your little calculations about what you did or why you deserve to not serve. And that's on a good day. I'm that way on a good day. Jesus is on like the most stressful night of his life. And he loves his disciples to the end. So they're all pretending they don't notice. They would have this debate periodically. Who is the greatest? Luke tells us they had one before Jesus started his long, almost year-long journey to Jerusalem, okay? Who is the greatest? They all were thinking, Jesus is gonna be somebody big someday, and I'm hoping to get a high position of authority in his new government. Shortly before this meal, on the way into Jerusalem, James and John had their mom go to Jesus and say, could my boys sit at your right and left hand when you come in your kingdom? And Jesus is like, you don't know what you're asking. If you want to be first, how often did he say, the one who's first has to be last? They're jockeying for position. The last thing they want to do is take the place of a slave. You would think that would put you to the back of the line as far as your authority in this new kingdom. But what Luke tells us in 22:24, this same argument broke out around the dinner table. The chronology is unclear as to when it happened. I kind of like to think it happened here at the beginning. And that as they're arguing, Jesus himself slips away, strips down. He strips down, it says, takes off his outer garments, plural. So he's probably down to like the loincloth of a slave, wraps this towel around his waist, it would have been long. And the argument stops as they realize what Jesus is doing. And maybe even part of the room sees it first and the other part of the room is still arguing. And so here they are, pretending they don't notice, arguing about who's the greatest, and Jesus, the creator God, Lord of the universe, is down washing the feet. He took off his robe and he wrapped a towel around his waist. It's hard for us to wrap our minds around the greatness of Christ and what humility this took. He's already humbled himself by leaving heaven and coming to earth. He's lived as a poor man. He suffered shame. He suffered in so many ways as he heads towards his final suffering. And Andrew Murray, in his wonderful book, Humility, I love the cover of this. It's just the basin from this foot washing. Murray writes, "O wondrous spectacle on which angels gazed with adoring wonder." You know, there are 60,000 or more angels. Jesus said, I could call 12 legions of angels right now. We've got probably millions of angels staring down at this scene. And the whole time Jesus was on earth, the angels are probably sitting there with their mouths just hanging wide open. And yet I think the mouth got a little bigger here as they saw God the Son get down and begin to wash the feet of the disciples. Christ, the creator and king of the universe, at whose beck legions of angels are ready to serve him. Who might with one word of love have said, which of the 12 must do the work? He could have called the angels to come and wash the disciples' feet, and they would have been so honored to do so. He could have called them to wash his feet, and that would have been the greatest honor. But he instead chooses the slave's place for his own, takes the soiled feet in his own holy hands and washes them. Verse 3, all authority had been put into his hands. And what do we find in his hands in verse 4? The soiled feet of the disciples. Jesus says, if you want to be great, you need to be the servant of all. This is the bar that I'm setting. The disciples would have been in stunned silence. In fact, this would have been enough to silence all but the most determined, clueless extrovert. A guy like Peter. As Jesus goes down the line, he comes to Simon Peter, who says, Lord, are you gonna wash my feet? And Jesus is like, yeah. How'd you guess? Captain Obvious. And Jesus replies, Peter, you don't understand now what I'm doing, but someday you will. You are gonna have to serve people who just don't understand what you're doing. They don't appreciate you. They don't know what a sacrifice this is. They don't know how long you've been doing this. They think they deserve it. They're really pretty completely clueless about what this is costing you. You don't understand, Jesus says. In fact, he washed all the feet, including Judas. Jesus calls us to serve not just people who are clueless, people who don't appreciate our service. He calls us to serve our enemies. He calls us to serve the traitors. He calls us to serve the haters in our lives. And that's exactly what he did. Peter, you don't understand, but someday you will. No, you will never, ever, it's emphatic, wash my feet unless I wash you. You have no part with me, Peter. Well, then wash my hands and head as well, Lord, not just my feet. Sponge bath. Peter, a person who has bathed all over does not need to wash except for the feet to be entirely clean. You just had a bath, Peter. Remember? And you disciples are clean. Well, not all of you. Judas didn't say it. They didn't understand that at the time. They had no idea Judas was going to betray them. They weren't real happy about it later either. What's he mean here? What's he saying? Well, one of the patterns in John is Jesus will do like, he'll use like a physical illustration or do a physical act, and then there'll be a spiritual teaching to it. You know, it's, he feeds 5,000 people with five loaves of bread, and then he says, I'm the bread of life. Or he says, I'm the light of the world, and then he opens the eyes of a blind guy. Or he says, destroy this temple and I'll raise it up in 3 days. But he's actually talking about his own body, okay? So there's like this physical thing, and then there's a spiritual teaching with it. What is he saying here? He's saying, Christ's forgiveness is once for all time. I think that's what he means here. This ritual cleansing that they had already gotten, you know, that corresponds to the washing of the blood of Christ. And eventually Christian baptism is kind of what that would kind of link up to in the new covenant. And what Jesus is saying is, once I've forgiven you, Peter, you've already been forgiven. You have your trust in me. And so you don't need to go and get more forgiveness. And this is true of every single Christian. If you have a relationship with Jesus Christ, there's nothing further you need to do to get more forgiveness or to maintain that forgiveness. Some so-called Christians will teach you need to go back and get your weekly dose of forgiveness. No, Jesus said on the cross, it is finished. Once for all, it says in the book of Hebrews. And so there's no additional stuff you gotta do once you've been forgiven. He died for your sins, past, present, and future. He knew all the things you would mess up on in the future. It was all future when he died on the cross. He died for all of it. So his forgiveness is once for all time. All these guys, except for Judas, had that because he never really was a true believer in Jesus. But what he's saying is Christians still need Christ to, quote, wash their feet. That even though we've been completely cleansed by Christ, we go out into this world and we get all kinds of gunk on us. We lose perspective, we get anxious, we get angry, we lose our temper, we do the wrong thing, we fall into sin, we start to wonder what God thinks about me, we start to view this world as all that there is, we forget about heaven, all these different things where we get just kind of soiled by the world, we get stained by the world. And what we need to do is we need to learn to come back to Jesus. I need it on a daily basis. I need to sit down with him and be like, oh yeah, that's right. I need to sit in his word and have him pour his perspective into me, pour his joy, his love into me in an experiential way so that I can go back out and face the world with the right perspective. Knowing who I am, what Jesus wants of me, I get my direction from him. This is that continual cleansing. And so we need to have our feet washed by Jesus on a regular basis. He still ministers to us. It's a living relationship. But that doesn't mean we're going back and getting more forgiveness from him. But we're getting kind of a cleansing from him. I think that's what he's saying. After washing their feet, he put on his robe again and sat down. And you can imagine just silence across the room. Do you understand what I was doing? And then he answers his own question. you call me teacher and Lord. I hear you guys talking about me. And you're right. That's what I am. I am the teacher. I am the Lord. And if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet. In case you missed it in verse 14, he says it again. I have given you an example to follow. In case you missed it there, he says it again. Do as I have done unto you. The only place Jesus says he's given us an example, right here. Very important. Don't forget this, he says. And in case you missed it there, he says it again in verse 16. I tell you the truth, slaves are not greater than their master. Nor is the messenger more important than the one who sends the message. I'm the master, you're the servant. I'm the king, you're my messenger. And now that you know these things, you will be blessed, or a better word for that is happy, is what the word means. You will be happy if you do them. This is the key to happiness, service, radical, sacrificial service. And so Jesus, he's calling them in this very memorable night, with this very memorable act, to serve. And he's showing them the way to do it. He's doing the dirty job, the gross thing that nobody wants to do, and he's doing it at the worst possible time for him to do it. And he is serving. He is serving. And what he's setting up is a community where we're not all reclining at the table wondering when somebody's gonna serve me, but where we're tripping over one another to get down and to serve and to do that dirty work, to get our hands dirty. Jesus says, you wanna be great? Grab a towel. That's what I did. Grab a towel. Don't just sit up there at your table hoping somebody will serve or dabble in serving. He says, no, grab a towel, serve those who don't understand, serve the haters, serve your enemies, serve everybody, because that's what I did. Serve one another. This is the command here. Let's think about what we can learn about service, reasons why, motivations for, what empowers us to do this. One, well, remember what verse 3 said? Jesus knew that the Father had put everything into his hands, given authority over everything. He had come from God. He would return to God. He knew who he was, where he came from, where he was headed. And the truth is, we also know, have been given authority by Christ. And we know who we are and where we're headed. And that gives us a security. It's our insecurities so often that keep us from serving. You know, Jesus had, all things were put into his hands, but what does he say at the end of Matthew? He says, all authority has been given to me, therefore go in my authority. He's authorizing his followers to go in his name. We can serve in bold ways, fearless ways. He had come from God. We haven't come from God in the same sense where he left heaven to come to earth, but we've been born of God and we're new creatures. And we're indwelt by God's Spirit. And we know where we're headed. We know we're returning to God so soon. This whole life is a very short period of time during which we can serve God and serve other people. And we need to remember that. And that will put everything else in your life into perspective. We know who we are and where we're going. Rick Warren, in his fantastic book, The Purpose-Driven Life, still one of the top-selling books of this century, he writes this. He's got a whole lot on serving in there. He says, servants don't need to cover their walls with plaques and awards to validate their work. Servant of the week, servant of the month, where's my plaque? I serve somebody. He's like, no, that's not serving. That's called trying to get an award, trying to get recognition. We don't need that. We're not these insecure. Did anyone notice? Is anyone giving me a pat on the back? Servants find status symbols unnecessary. They don't measure their worth by their achievements. They know what God thinks about them. They don't care what other people say or do. This is not, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. This is not, I hook you up and then you hook me up with something later. No, I'm just giving. You scratch my back, I scratch. That's not serving, that's a transaction. Jesus says, I just serve and I expect nothing in return. Warren says, the opportunity to be a servant confronts me dozens of times a day. What will those be for you today? Have you noticed them already? There's probably still several left. He says, I'm given the choice to decide between meeting my needs or the needs of others. We like to overcomplicate Christianity and following Jesus. But at its core, it's serve. Serve. Serve one another. I've set you an example. You want to know what it's like to follow me? Serve. Look at me washing the feet. Self-denial is the very core of servanthood. Here's a good litmus test. We can measure our servant's heart by how we respond when others treat us like servants. Oh, such disrespect. Who do you think I am? Your servant here? Yeah, actually. That's what Jesus thinks. That's what he was. How do you react when you're taken for granted, bossed around, or treated as an inferior? That is where the rubber meets the road. You probably have people in your home church who you just know, they're servants. And praise God for them. This is what we need more of. We know who we are. We know where we're going. We have a security that enables us to serve. Secondly, we also have Christ's example. He says over and over and over again, serve, serve, serve. Like me. You're not better than me. I've served. Follow my example. Do as I've done to you. This is just the right thing to do. Jesus has called us. And it is a privilege to walk in his steps and to suffer the way that he suffers. The early Christians went away rejoicing they'd been counted worthy to suffer shame for the sake of Christ. That's how we should feel if we really know him. It's hard to understand if you've not met Jesus in a personal way, but once you have, you know what this is like. Jesus tells a story in Luke 17, a parable about servants. And he says, you know, the good servant works out all day serving hard and then comes home and they're not like, wow, I am off duty. No, then they get the meal ready and they serve the master. And he's like, and then they don't sit around waiting for compliments. He says, no, you're just like, I'm an unworthy servant. I've only done what I'm supposed to do. And he says, that's what we're supposed to be like. That's what we're supposed to be like. That's what he's modeling for us here. It's what he does for us. Third, we serve for the blessings. Jesus says, now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. Notice what he doesn't say. Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed. The happiness doesn't come from just knowing. James says, don't be a forgetful hearer, but be an effectual doer of the word. Some of us, we know so much and we're not doing anything with it. That's the problem in your spiritual life. You're just not doing anything. You're not acting. You're like spiritually constipated. You're always taking in and nothing ever goes out. It's not how you were designed to live. It's the Dead Sea syndrome. All these nutrients flow in and nothing can live there. No, you need to give, give, give out. Not now you know these things, you'll be blessed. He also doesn't say this. Now that you know these things, you'll be happy if you did them at one point in your life. No. This is the continuous present tense. If you keep on doing them, your happiness is directly related to your serving others on a regular basis. Sometimes it's easy to think, well, you know, I've really served in the past and that's good enough. But Jesus loved his disciples to the end. It's something I feel like God is challenging me on. He's like, how much are you really laying down your lives, your life for the people in your home church? Okay, you've done it with past groups you've been in. How are you doing it now? Are you keeping people at arm's length? Or are you really in there loving people? You will be happy if you keep on doing them. Keep on serving like Christ. And for the rest of your life, he'll keep pushing you further and further and further. We're not like, wow, now I'm upper management. Now I don't have to serve anymore. And now I'm out of the grunt work. No. Jesus was upper management, okay? And he served more than anybody. We serve more the higher we go. Rick Warren again says, we're only fully alive when we're helping others. Serve or die. Serve or die spiritually. Jesus said, if you insist on saving your life, you'll lose it. And he repeated this 5 times in the Gospels. It's hard to find a more repeated truth by Jesus. It's hard to find a more forgotten truth by me, as evidenced by my complaining and my shock when I have to serve and when I suffer. If you aren't serving, you're just existing. You feel like this spiritually, you're just existing. Look at what Jesus says here and what he does. Let it sink into your heart. Serve or die. Serve one another. You're going to give your life for something. What will it be? Warren asks. A career, a sport, a hobby, fame, wealth? None of these things will have lasting significance. Service is the pathway to real significance. The fulfillment that you're lacking, the meaning that you're lacking, the dissatisfaction, the unhappiness that you have. Jesus says, if you know these things, you will be happy if you keep on doing them. Let's try that and see how that works. Let's take Jesus up on his word. Let's take him seriously on what he says. See if he's a liar or not. A fourth reason is out of gratitude for what Jesus has done for us. He says a few verses later, a very famous verse, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. And so Jesus says, love as I have loved you. This is not new. The command to love was not new. They had this in the Old Testament. This word for new is a renewed commandment. It's not new out of nothing, but he's renewing this. He's casting this in a new light. What did it say in the Old Testament? Love your neighbor as yourself. Do unto others as you want them to do unto you. Jesus says, not good enough anymore. It's not love your neighbor as yourself. It's love your neighbor as I have loved you. Because my love is the greatest love that's ever existed. Love as I have loved you. He is showing us what love really looks like. He's redefining love. He's done what no one ever expected God to do. To give in this way for the good of another. And so out of gratitude, out of response to his love, we say, yes, Lord, I wanna love that way. Fill my heart with your love. And John says in his gospel, we can love because Christ has first loved us. This left such an impact on him, this teaching right here. God is love, he said. And so we can love, but we've gotta have the love of God pouring into our hearts to warm up our cold, cold, selfish heart. But ask him to fill your heart with that love, and you will find that love flowing over into other people. Fifth and finally, we love for the sake of others. Jesus says, right after the verse I just read, by this everyone will know that you're my disciples if you love one another. People will look at us and they will say, see how they love one another. And we need to love the world around us, and that's very important. But what Jesus says here is a special emphasis on loving one another, and that this is part of representing Christ to the world. And other people will see that, and it will just be the most attractive thing in the world. And they will want to be part of a spiritual community like this. Some of you, this is what drew you in. This is the first thing that struck me when I walked into a home church. I was like, these people really like each other. And I was kind of scared. I was like, I don't know if I want to be like this close to people. I just kind of came and watched and left earlier and earlier for like 6 months when I showed up at all, because it was kind of scary to me and I didn't know how to relate to people. And I needed God to fill me with his love and to teach me how to love one another. And this is what we need. And this is what God is building here, a community where we love each other and it shines like stars in the dark night to the world around us. We need a serving community. And we have so many people in our home churches who serve. And I just wanna say to you, God sees that. And God is pleased with that. The ways you serve and the ways no one sees, God sees and will reward you for that. And one day he will say, well done, good and faithful servant. How do we serve one another? There's a million different ways, as unique as each of our own individual personalities, and maybe the Q&A, people have some ideas for how to serve one another. Let me just throw a couple up here. Doing the thing no one wants to do. What is that in your life? In the place where you live, in your home church? What's the thing nobody wants to do? Why don't you do that? Not argue about it, just do it. Giving our time and money and possessions. This is, we view our stuff, our time, our talents, our possessions as God's, and we just want to serve with them. They're yours, Lord. How can I use them for you the way you want me to use them? With our words. Our words can be so powerful. Words of encouragement. Can you offer some words of encouragement? Sometimes there's a word of correction, and sometimes this is actually the most loving thing we can do, is to speak the hard truth. And sometimes the most passive, cowardly, selfish thing we can do is to not talk when we need to speak up. Is there a conversation you've been avoiding where you need to speak some love that the person might not feel love, but they will later? With our words, we can serve one another. Relational investment, where we give our hearts, where we let people in, where we spend time with them, where we love people, we do life together. Letting other people have their way. Why do we gotta do it your way? Why not just let other people, see how that goes, just letting other people have their way. And again, this is not doormat love here. Jesus was not passive or some doormat that just let people walk over. This is actually very bold, sacrificial love. When they're not around, what better way to love someone than to think about them and to pray for them when they're not around, to pray specific, sustained prayers for other people? Listening. There is a famine of listening. What a great way to love someone, to stop and shut up and not one up their story, but just to take an interest in their life and to listen. And forgiving. One of the great acts of love, one of the great acts of service, is to reflect on how much I've been forgiven and then to forgive others. You guys probably have a lot more ideas on that. Let's draw just two conclusions. One, will you let Jesus cleanse you? Some of you have never gotten that once for all cleansing. Jesus wants to give you that permanent purification where his blood cleanses you from all the wrong things you've ever done, that stain that you've been trying so hard to get out of your soul. You've been doing works, you've been in denial, you keep saying, I'm sorry, over and over again. God says, none of that can cleanse your soul, but Christ can. His death on the cross was final, and he said, it is finished, and he died for you, you. Will you invite him to pay for those sins? That's what you need, and you're cleansed once for all. Some of us need to learn how to, ideally, I think daily is a great goal, go to Jesus. We've already experienced that once for all cleansing, but we need to experience his, he washes us with his word, he purifies us with his word, he directs us, he sets us back on track, he pours his love and his peace into our hearts. We need that if we're gonna function, if we're gonna serve others. We need to get served by him and loved by him on an ongoing way. Secondly, will you follow Jesus' path of servant love? Will you follow his path of servant love? He's got service prepared for you you never dreamed you could do, stuff you never would have picked on your own. But because you've been loved by him and you're directed by him, he wants you to learn to serve. Jesus says, grab a towel. What do you think? Come on down here with me and serve. Serve. You know, there comes a point in every Christian's life where you say, wait, God, you want me to do what? You want me to do what? And he will keep bringing us back to that point. And he will have deeper service for us to do, more sacrificial service for us to do. And as he expands your capacity to serve, and you will find your joy deepening. Because verse 17, if you know these things, you will be happy if you keep on continually doing them. And you will find happiness in your heart. And you will know you're being faithful to Christ, walking in his footsteps. And one day he will say, well done, good and faithful servant. Yeah, Lord, what a sight this was. What a powerful object lesson for you to do what you did. And this was just kind of a microcosm of your entire life here on earth. And Lord, we need you to warm our hearts. We need you to reveal your love, your nature to us. Help us to take this challenge seriously, Lord, to serve one another. I pray, Lord, that we would, as we do that, we would experience the happiness, we'd experience the satisfaction that comes from knowing that we're doing what you've called us to do. We're walking in your footsteps. Give us the security, Lord, to serve one another. And Lord, I pray most of all for people who've never experienced firsthand, personally, your service in their lives. I pray that they would experience your cleansing. I pray they would come to you and that they would experience that washing that you want to give them. Amen.